17. Trapped in Shadows. It is not a lesson I claim to be able to teach. Experience herself is the great teacher, and you must seek her directly. From Oathbringer, Preface.
I still think we should kill him.
Ken, the Parsh woman who had been playing cards, said to the others. Kaladin sat tied and bound to a tree. He'd spent the night there. They'd let him up several times to use the latrine today, but otherwise kept him bound. Though their knots were good, they always posted guards, even though he'd turned himself in to them in the first place. His muscles were stiff and the posture was uncomfortable, but he had endured worse as a slave. Almost the entire afternoon had passed so far, and they were still arguing about him. He didn't see that yellow-white spren again, the one that had been a ribbon of light. He almost thought he'd imagined it. At least the rain had finally stopped. Hopefully that meant the high storms and stormlight were close to returning.
"Kill him?"
another of the Parshmen said.
"Why? What danger is he to us?"
"He will tell others where we are.
He found us easily enough on his own. I doubt others will have trouble, Ken."
The Parshmen didn't seem to have a specific leader. Kaladin could hear them talking from where they stood, huddled together beneath a tarp. The air smelled wet, and the clump of trees shivered when a gust of wind blew through. A shower of water drops came down on top of him, somehow more cold than the weeping itself. Soon, blessedly, this would all dry up and he could finally see the sun again.
"So we let him go?" Ken asked.
She had a gruff voice, angry.
"I don't know. Would you actually do it, Ken? Bash his head in yourself?"
The tent fell silent.
"If it means they can't take us again," she said, "yes, I'd kill him. I won't go back, Ton."
They had simple, dark-eyed, Alethi names, matched by their uncomfortably familiar accents. Kaladin didn't worry for his safety. Though they'd taken his knife, span reed, and spheres, he could summon Syl at a moment's notice. She flitted nearby on gusts of wind, dodging between the branches of trees. The Parshmen eventually left their conference, and Kaladin dozed. He was later roused by the noise of them gathering up their meager belongings. An axe or two, some water skins, the nearly ruined bags of grain. As the sun set, long shadows stretched across Kaladin, plunging the camp into darkness again. It seemed that the group moved at night. The tall male who had been playing cards the night before approached Kaladin, who recognized the pattern of his skin. He untied the ropes binding Kaladin to the tree, the ones around his ankles, but left the bonds on Kaladin's hands.
"You could capture that card," Kaladin noted.
The Parshman stiffened.
"The card game," Kaladin said. "The squire can capture if supported by an allied card, so you were right."
The Parshman grunted, yanking on the rope to tow Kaladin to his feet. He stretched, working stiff muscles in painful cramps as the other Parshman broke down the last of the improvised tarp tents, the one that had been fully enclosed. Earlier in the day, though, Kaladin had gotten a look at what was inside. Children. There were a dozen of them, dressed in smocks of various ages, from toddler to young teenager. The females wore their hair loose, and the males wore theirs tied or braided. They hadn't been allowed to leave the tent except at a few carefully supervised moments, but he had heard them laughing. He'd first worried they were captured human children. As the camp broke, they scattered about, excited to finally be released. One younger girl scampered across the wet stones and seized the empty hand of the man leading Kaladin. Each of the children bore the distinctive look of their elders, the not-quite-Parshendi appearance with the armored portions on the sides of their heads and forearms. For the children, the color of the carapace was a light orange-pink. Kaladin couldn't define why this sight seemed so strange to him. Parshmen did breed, though people often spoke of them being bred, like animals. And, well, that wasn't far from the truth, was it? Everyone knew it.
What would Shen, Relaine, think if Kaladin had said those words out loud? The procession moved out of the trees, Kaladin led by his ropes. They kept talk to a minimum, and as they crossed through a field in the darkness, Kaladin had a distinct impression of familiarity. Had he been here before? Done this before?
What about the king?
His captor said, speaking in a soft voice, but turning his head to direct the question at Kaladin.
Elokar? What? Oh, right. The cards.
The king is one of the most powerful cards you can place, Kaladin said, struggling to remember all the rules. He can capture any other card except another king, and can't be captured himself unless touched by three enemy cards of knight or better. And he is immune to the Soulcaster, I think.
When I watched men play, they used this card rarely. If it is so powerful, why delay?
If your king gets captured, you lose, Kaladin said. So you only play him if you're desperate or if you are certain you can defend him. Half the times I've played, I left him in my barrack all game. The parchman grunted, then looked to the girl at his side, who tugged on his arm and pointed. He gave her a whispered response, and she ran on tiptoes toward a patch of flowering rock buds, visible by the light of the first moon. The vines pulled back, blossoms closing. The girl, however, knew to squat at the side and wait, hands poised, until the flowers reopened. Then she snatched one in each hand, her giggles echoing across the plain. Joyce Bren followed her like blue leaves as she returned, giving Kaladin a wide berth. Ken, walking with a cudgel in her hands, urged Kaladin's captor to keep moving. She watched the area with the nervousness of a scout on a dangerous mission. That's it, Kaladin thought, remembering why this felt familiar. Sneaking away from Tassinar. It had happened after he'd been condemned by Amaram, but before he'd been sent to the Shattered Plains. He avoided thinking of those months, his repeated failures, the systematic butchering of his last hints of idealism. Well, he'd learned that dwelling on such things took him to dark places. He'd failed so many people during those months. Nelma had been one of those. He could remember the touch of her hand in his, a rough, calloused hand. That had been his most successful escape attempt. It had lasted 5 days.
You're not monsters, Kaladin whispered. You're not soldiers. You're not even the seeds of the void. You're just runaway slaves.
His captor spun, yanking on Kaladin's rope. The parchment seized Kaladin by the front of his uniform, and his daughter hid behind his leg, dropping one of her flowers and whimpering.
Do you want me to kill you?
The parchment asked, pulling Kaladin's face close to his own.
You insist on reminding me how your kind see us?
Kaladin grunted.
Look at my forehead, parchment. And?
Slave brands.
What?
Storms. Parchmen weren't branded, and they didn't mix with other slaves. Parchmen were actually too valuable for that. When they make a human into a slave, Kaladin said, they brand him. I've been here. Right where you are.
And you think that makes you understand?
Of course it does. I'm one.
I have spent my entire life living in a fog, the parchment yelled at him. Every day knowing I should say something, do something to stop this. Every night clutching my daughter, wondering why the world seems to move around us in the light, while we are trapped in shadows. They sold her mother. Sold her! Because she had birthed a healthy child which made her good breeding stock. Do you understand that, human? Do you understand watching your family be torn apart and knowing you should object, knowing deep in your soul that something is profoundly wrong? Can you know that feeling of being unable to say a single storming word to stop it?
The parchment pulled him even closer.
They may have taken your freedom, but they took our minds.
He dropped Kaladin and whirled, gathering up his daughter and holding her close as he jogged to catch up to the others, who had turned back at the outburst. Kaladin followed, yanked by his rope, stepping on the little girl's flower in his forced haste. Syl zipped past, and when Kaladin tried to catch her attention, she just laughed and flew higher on a burst of wind. His captor suffered several quiet chastisements when they caught up. This column couldn't afford to draw attention. Kaladin walked with them and remembered. He did understand a little. You were never free while you ran. You felt as if the open sky and the endless fields were a torment. You could feel the pursuit following, and each morning you awoke expecting to find yourself surrounded. Until one day, you were right. But Parshman? He'd accepted Shen into Bridge 4, yes. But accepting that a sole Parshman could be a bridgeman was starkly different from accepting the entire people as, well, human. As the column stopped to distribute waterskins to the children, Kaladin felt at his forehead, tracing the scarred shape of the glyphs there. They took our minds. They'd tried to take his mind, too. They'd beaten him to the stones, stolen everything he loved, and murdered his brother, left him unable to think straight. Life had become a blur until one day he'd found himself standing over a ledge watching raindrops die and struggling to summon the motivation to end his life. Syl's sword passed in the shape of a shimmering ribbon.
Syl, Kaladin hissed, I need to talk to you. This isn't the time for...
Hush, she said, then giggled and zipped around him before flitting over and doing the same to his captor. Kaladin frowned. She was acting so carefree. Too carefree? Like she'd been back before they'd forged their bond? No, it couldn't be.
Syl, he begged as she returned. Is something wrong with the bond? Please, I didn't...
It's not that, she said, speaking in a furious whisper. I think Parshman might be able to see me. Some, at least. And that other Spren is still here, too. A higher Spren, like me. Where? Kaladin asked, twisting.
She's invisible to you,
Syl said, becoming a group of leaves and blowing around him.
I think I've fooled her into thinking I'm just a wind spren.
She zipped away, leaving a dozen unanswered questions on Kaladin's lips.
Storms? Is that spren how they know where to go?
The column started again, and Kaladin walked for a good hour in silence before Syl next decided to come back to him. She landed on his shoulder, becoming the image of a young woman in her whimsical skirt.
She's gone ahead for a little bit, she said, and the Parshmen aren't looking.
The Spren is guiding them, Kaladin said under his breath. Syl, this Spren must be...
From him,
she whispered, wrapping her arms around herself and growing small, actively shrinking to about two-thirds her normal size.
Void Spren...
There's more, Kaladin said. These Parshmen. How do they know how to talk, how to act? Yes, they've spent their lives around society, but to be this, well, normal, after such a long time half asleep?
The Everstorm, Syl said. Power has filled the holes in their souls, bridging the gaps. They didn't just wake, Kaladin. They've been healed. Connection refounded, identity restored. There's more to this than we ever realized. Somehow, when you conquered them, you stole their ability to change forms. You literally ripped off a piece of their souls and locked it away.
She turned sharply.
She's coming back. I will stay nearby in case you need a blade.
She left, zipping straight into the air as a ribbon of light. Kaladin continued to shuffle behind the column, chewing on her words before speeding up and stepping beside his captor.
You're being smart in some ways, Kaladin said. It's good to travel at night, but you're following the riverbed over there. I know it makes for more trees and more secure camping, but this is literally the first place someone will look for you.
Several of the other Parshmen gave him glances from nearby. His captor didn't say anything.
The big group is an issue too, Kaladin added. You should break into smaller groups and meet up each morning, so if you get spotted, you'll seem less threatening. You can say you were sent somewhere by Light Eyes, and travelers might let you go. If they run across all 70 of you together, there's no chance of that. This is all assuming, of course, you don't want to fight, which you don't. If you fight,
they'll call out the High Lords against you. For now, they've got bigger problems. His captor grunted. I can help you, Kaladin said. I might not understand what you've been through, but I do know what it feels like to run.
You think I'd trust you? The parchman finally said. You will want us to be caught.
I'm not sure I do, Kaladin said, truthful. His captor said nothing more, and Kaladin sighed, dropping back into position behind. Why had the Everstorm not granted these parchmen powers like those in the Shattered Plains? What of the stories of scripture and lore, the desolations? They eventually stopped for another break, and Kaladin found himself a smooth rock to sit against, nestled into the stone. His captor tied the rope to a nearby lonely tree, then went to confer with the others. Kaladin leaned back, lost in thought, until he heard a sound. He was surprised to find his captor's daughter approaching. She carried a water skin in two hands and stopped right beyond his reach. She didn't have shoes, and the walk so far had not been kind to her feet, which, though tough with calluses, were still scored by scratches and scrapes. She timidly set the water skin down, then backed away. She didn't flee, as Kaladin might have expected, when he reached for the water. Thank you, he said, then took a mouthful. It was pure and clear. Apparently the parchmen knew how to settle and scoop their water. He ignored the rumbling of his stomach.
Will they really chase us? The girl asked.
By Misham's pale green light, he decided this girl was not as timid as he had assumed. She was nervous, but she met his eyes with hers.
Why can't they just let us go? She asked. Could you go back and tell them? We don't want trouble. We just want to go away.
They'll come, Kaladin said. I'm sorry. They have a lot of work to do in rebuilding, and they'll want the extra hands. You are a resource they can't simply ignore. The humans he'd visited hadn't known to expect some terrible Voidbringer force. Many thought their parchment had merely run off in the chaos.
But why? She said, sniffling. What did we do to them?
You tried to destroy them.
No, we're nice. We've always been nice. I never hit anyone, even when I was mad.
I didn't mean you specifically, Kaladin said. Your ancestors, the people like you from long ago. There was a war and storms. How did you explain slavery to a 7-year-old? He tossed the water skin to her and she scampered back to her father, who had only just noticed her absence. He stood, a stark silhouette in the night, studying Kaladin.
They're talking about making camp, Syl whispered from nearby.
She had crawled into a crack in the rock.
The Voidspren wants them to march on through the day, but I don't think they're going to. They're worried about their grain spoiling.
Is that Spren watching me right now? Kaladin asked.
No.
Then let's cut this rope. He turned and hid what he was doing, then quickly summoned Syl as a knife to cut himself free. That would change his eye color, but in the darkness he hoped the parchman wouldn't notice. Syl puffed back into a Spren.
Sword now, she said. The spears they took from you have all run out, but they'll scatter at seeing a blade.
No. Kaladin instead picked up a large stone. The parchman hushed, noticing his escape. Kaladin carried his rock a few steps, then dropped it, crushing a rock bud. He was surrounded a few moments later by angry parchmen carrying cudgels. Kaladin ignored them, picking through the wreckage of the rock bud. He held up a large section of shell. The inside of this, he said, turning it over for them, will still be dry. Despite the rainfall, the rock bud needs a barrier between itself and the water outside for some reason, though it always seems eager to drink after a storm. Who has my knife? Nobody moved to return it. If you scrape off this inner layer, Kaladin said, tapping at the rock bud shell, you can get to the dry portion. Now that the rain has stopped, I should be able to get us a fire going, assuming nobody has lost my tinder bag. We need to boil that grain,
then dry it into cakes. They won't be tasty, but they'll keep. If you don't do something soon, your supplies will rot.
He stood up and pointed. Since we're already here, we should be near enough the river that we can gather more water. It won't flow much longer with the end of the rains. Rockbud shells don't burn particularly well, so we'll want to harvest some real wood and dry it at the fire during the day. We can keep that one small, then do the cooking tomorrow night. In the dark, the smoke is less likely to reveal us, and we can shield the light in the trees. I just have to figure out how we're going to cook without any pots to boil the water.
The parchman stared at him. Then Chen finally pushed him away from the rock bud and took up the shard he'd been holding. Kaladin spotted his original captor standing near the rock where Kaladin had been sitting. The parchman held the rope Kaladin had cut, rubbing its sliced-through end with his thumb. After a short conference, the parchman dragged him to the trees he'd indicated, returned his knife, standing by with every cudgel they had, and demanded that he prove he could build a fire with wet wood. He did just that.